Hey there, random Trek fans, or listeners, I guess it's presumptuous of me to think you're a fan. This is Scott McNulty, and before we jump into the show, I wanted to tell you that we are now in the Incomparable membership drive. That's right, this month you'll be hearing across all of your favorite Incomparable shows, us suggesting to you that you should become a member of the Incomparable. Why? Because you love us. You could sign up for a monthly or annual pledge to support this podcast directly or any of the other fine podcasts on the Incomparable Network. Here's what you do. Go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. You'll then be asked to pick the shows on the network you'd like to support. If you just check the box for Random Trek, your entire contribution will come to me. Ha ha ha, and I will be rich, filthy rich, after a few fees are taken out for administrative handling. Now, I suggest, if you listen to other podcasts on the Incomparable Network, you go ahead and check those boxes, check all the boxes, check somebody else's box, and don't even include Random Trek, and your contribution will be shared equally by everyone who you check on that support page. So please do. As a thank you, you might be thinking, well, what's in it for me, Scott? You will receive, as a member, lots of extra things. There's exclusive bonus audio, a bootleg podcast where you can hear episodes of shows right after they've been recorded without having to wait for the edited version to arrive, and a members-only community on Slack. I am on that Slack community, so if you wanted to chat with me in a text-based scenario, you could do that. Since this is pledge season, this month, many of the shows on the network will be posting bonus episodes just for members. Random Trek will have a bonus episode that is only for members. It will be pretty special, and I think you'll enjoy it. We are, in fact, going to be doing a Random Trek Total Party Kill, which is our D&D / role-playing game crossover, and we will be playing Star Trek Adventures, the Star Trek RPG. So look for that, members, at some point in the not-too-distant future. There are contribution levels at $5, $10, and $20 per month, and annual equivalents are available as well. If you're already a member, it's easy to increase your pledge to a higher level and get some special goodies in return. So, if you'd like to support us, go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. Thank you so much for listening and for even considering becoming a member of The Incomparable. And if you're already a member, thank you so much for being a member. And now, on with the show. Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is back for only the second time, Stephen Shapansky. Stephen, thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me on again, once again, Scott.
You're welcome. The pleasure, as they say, is all mine. Why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself, Stephen?
I'm mostly known for my Doctor Who podcasts, that being Radio Free Skaro, The Memory Cheats, and the podcast that I do with my wife on the Incomparable Network, which is called Lazy Doctor Who. But I've been... It feels weird that I've only been on this show twice because I've sort of gone on some Star Trek binges over since the last time I was on this podcast. So I've seen a lot more Star Trek since I last talked about it.
Well, let's talk about your binges then. I know your current slow binge, I believe the kids are calling it. I don't know if anyone calls it that, is right. The original series. But I know you've been watching some other things. So before we get to the original series, what else did you watch in your binge?
Well, in preparation for Discovery, I thought let's watch a series that I've never even seen anything of before, and that was Enterprise. And I was expecting to hate it based on what literally everyone was telling me. And there certainly are some bad episodes in there. But at the end of it, I grew fond of it, oddly enough. And I really, the season three was definitely of its time and its post 9/11 age that it was made. And it's a very dark season for Star Trek. But then the multi-parters for season four, I thought were quite good. But I thought, well, that's the worst. Let's get on to Voyager. I'm sure that will be better. And no, I can tell you that I think Voyager ranks below Enterprise in my personal ranking system of Star Trek series, because Yes. Sorry, you were going to ask why I thought that.
Yeah. Well, you were going to tell me. I was just ooing because I can sense people opening up various means of communication to argue this point.
I imagine so. Well, I think what gets me about both Enterprise and Voyager, and perhaps Discovery is what we might get to a little bit, is that I find that the original premise and idea for the series were very intriguing and exciting, and the original idea of what they would do with it. Like, apparently all of season one of Enterprise would basically be Earthbound and would be leading up to the launch of the Enterprise at the end of the season. But of course, they didn't do that. They said, no, we want to have adventures in space again, so let's do that. Okay, I guess we'll just make the same show. And Voyager, I think, wanted to be like, oh, maybe we'll be far flung off and in the D Delta Quadrant, and we'll have to like sort of fight our way back. And then they said, no, let's just have adventures in space again like we used to. And so it was just kind of like, it was very disappointing, I found Voyager. Because most everything happened in between episodes, and at the beginning of the next episode, you see, oh, after that frightful adventure that you never saw, we need some shore leave, so let's go into the holodeck. And that's basically how seven seasons worth of Voyager passed. And so I was very disappointed in Voyager, which is a shame because I quite like some of the characters. But and so now, as you say, I've started on Star Trek, the original series, which, apart from bits here and there in my youth, as a very young child, I had never really seen before. So I'm exactly one season in to my three-season journey of Star Trek, the original series.
And so you are a Doctor Who aficionado.
I am.
And you enjoy all of the Doctor Whos. Your Doctors Who, I suppose, is the correct way of pluralizing that.
I think so.
And Doctor Who and Star Trek share a long history, in that they've been on TV for a long time. Doctor Who, of course, wins the record because it's been on, I think, there's some record, like continuously in production or something. It's been on for a long time.
It has.
The biggest thing that I find problematic with the original series, other than the problematic sexism and stuff from that era, is the pacing is very different than current modern TV shows. So I wonder about your thoughts of that. And 'cause Doctor Who also shares that pacing.
It does. It's made differently. Like, Doctor Who is made like a, you know, a multi-camera studio show, like a soap opera would be in the U.S., which is not how Star Trek is made. I find that Star Trek is made kind of like TV, I suppose, in those days, was kind of made not unlike a B-movie, B-science fiction movie. You know, they cut to the close-ups and they're all very softly lit, and it's all very 1940s, 50s. Production styles in 1960s TV. That's not just Star Trek. That's across the board. So that I'm fine with that. I find it intriguing. I find it most interesting to see how TV was made back then. You did mention the sexual politics of the day. That I must admit is tough to get around.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not blaming Star Trek for that. Nor am I blaming TV. I'm blaming humanity.
Yes.
I guess from 50 years ago.
I will admit that I like Doctor Who. I like the modern kind of reboot of Doctor Who. I don't know what the Whovians call it. And I tried, when I was in college, I had a friend who was big into Doctor Who. And this was before the reboot, so he was like, hey, you should watch these Doctor Who's with me. And I was like, okay, I am a big geek, I'll watch Doctor Who with you. And he tried to have me watch some of the early Doctor Who's, and I just could not get through an episode. So I do not know if the similar kind of problematic sexism issues like that crop up in early Doctor Who as well. I assume they do, but I could be wrong. So, you know.
They don't, because Doctor Who was more aimed towards children and family audiences basically throughout its run. And so they very neatly sidestepped all those relationship plot lines and stuff. And so in that regard, it's almost less dated than perhaps Star Trek and other shows made at the time would be, because they don't deal with that at all. And so you're not necessarily confronted with unfortunate scenes that,
existed
in the, yes, and go, oh no, this would not pass today. Oh, I'm very uncomfortable watching this.
Yes, it's fascinating to talk to someone who's aware of it, but hasn't watched any of it and is steeped in a fandom as much as you are, of a different ilk, but still related. And it is interesting. I think that the movies obviously build on the most successful part of the show, which is the relationship between Kirk, McCoy, and Spock, clearly. And that led to some problems amongst cast members because they didn't really feel like they were being appreciated, which I can understand when you are, you know, Uhuru and you're standing just waiting for a message to come in.
Right. Waiting by the phone, essentially.
Exactly. But you did not get one of the rare, the jewels of the Random Trek Random Lottery is an original series episode because there are so few of them. You didn't get one of those. In fact, you got a Deep Space Nine episode. And we didn't even touch on Deep Space Nine in our catalog of what you've been watching. So have you watched through Deep Space Nine?
I watched, so my history with the rest of the series is that in college I watched Next Generation all the way through. I just hit a binge one in my first year in college when I had no friends. And so it was on like 12:30 at night every single night. And so I thought, instead of going out trying to make friends, I will stay in and watch this science fiction show. And I grew quite fond of it. And then I became fond of Deep Space Nine during season 6. That's actually where I picked it up, was season 6. And I was very much a fan, and I watched the whole series from the beginning because it also was on TV at the time every single night, and I watched that. And I haven't seen it since then, but then I realized that yes, Deep Space Nine is indeed the best of all the Star Treks, and I watching the episode that we have selected today. I can confirm that so many, like I haven't watched it in 20 years and I don't remember this specific episode, but there were so many great things about it that made me realize that, yes, that's right. I really quite like Deep Space Nine.
As we were talking about the most successful thing out of the original series is the relationship between Kirk, McCoy and Spock. I think the most successful thing out of any Star Trek series is really the relationships that they can build between the characters, which is why I kind of think Enterprise is a little shaky. But I get your Voyager thing as a pretty shaky too, once until Seven of Nine comes along, because then there's an interesting relationship of Seven of Nine and the Doctor and Janeway, and that just makes it more interesting to me. Deep Space Nine, though, I feel like has the most interesting characters and the most complex relationships between the characters, which makes it very rich. And there's a lot of storytelling that they can tell. And even this is a third season episode that we're going to talk about, which is Second Skin, third season, fifth episode for folks keeping count. And so the first couple of seasons of Deep Space Nine, probably not the best. I feel like they really hit their stride in the third season. But even that being said, there are so many lovely kind of character notes in this episode that just make it, you know, spoiler alert, I really enjoy this episode. It has Garrick, it has Kira Nerys, two of my favorite Star Trek characters ever. What more could it ask for?
Right? Perhaps more of Sisko, because he's my favorite.
He's not much in this episode. But before we delve into it, let's talk about the characters of Deep Space Nine. Now, you've already told me your favorite is Sisko, so what makes Sisko stand out for you?
I think he even takes longer to sort of grab a hold of his character as Avery Brooks. Mm-hmm. I think once he grows the beard and shaves his head like he did in Spencer for Hire, he basically becomes the captain he was born to be, I find. And up to this point, he's kind of an administrator, I think. But yes. But I really quite latched onto him after that.
And he has, you can see a glimpse of the Sisko that is to come in this episode, when he is with Garrick and Odo, and he tells Garrick, guess what? We're going to Cardassia, and you're coming with us. And Garrick says, well, why would I do that? And Sisko basically says, well, if you don't, the Bajorans are going to kick you up Deep Space Nine, and the Cardassians will probably kill you. And Garrick says, that's extortion. And there's this lovely thing where Sisko takes a moment, looks at him, and says, yes, it is. The conversation's over. They go to Cardassia. And I thought, that's the Captain Sisko we all know and love.
Yeah, I sensed a twinkle there. And I also, later on in the episode, when when Garak says, you know, don't think that I won't like sacrifice my life to save you and everything yes. like that. The first sign of things, I'm gone. And then basically, and then Sisko says, Garak, I do believe that's the first honest thing you've ever said to me. And I thought, what a great line. What a superb line.
Mm-hmm. And I love Garak's response to that. How perceptive of you, Captain.
Yeah.
Or Commander. I don't think he's actually a captain in this yet, which is another issue. But I don't know why he didn't start off as a captain, but whatever. That's neither here nor there. So let's delve into this episode. This is basically, so if you have not, you're listening to this, you haven't seen this episode, and you wonder, Second Skin, which one is that? That's the one where Kira becomes a Cardassian. or at least we're led to believe that she has been a Cardassian sleeper agent all along. And they take her back to Cardassia. And hijinks ensue.
As they often do with those dang Cardassians.
Oh, man. I will say this. Every Star Trek series needs kind of a central baddie. And I think Deep Space Nine has a couple. They obviously have the Founders and the Dominion, kind of the biggest ones. But I think the most interesting ones are the Cardassians, because the Cardassians are complicated. They are pretty evil, but then you get glimmers of, like in this episode, the her father, who isn't her father, is trying to do the right thing in many areas, and he's also kind of loyal to his home world, and he wants to make it better for everyone. He also wants his daughter back, and he's just being used by, you know, the Cardassian Secret Service, the Obsidian Order. So it's very complicated. And these Cardassians, they're not nice, but you scratch a little under that hard shell, and sometimes you find a heart of gold.
Yes, there's dissidence on Cardassia, and it's not all like one empire for world domination or universal domination. There are definite layers to this. It's a culture as opposed to just a race of aliens who are out there to destroy, and that's what makes them interesting. I'd forgotten about the Cardassians for the most part in Deep Space Nine. I'd forgotten most about Deep Space Nine for the most part until I watched this episode. And so I'm as I go through the Star Treks, I'm not sure if I'll watch Next Generation, because for some reason, just because it's so much more in the public eye, I find it's a lot more familiar to me. But the Deep Space Nine episodes aren't as much, and I'm looking forward to the bits with more Cardassians in it.
Oh yes, I feel like I've said this before, but the Next Generation is my default Star Trek. When I think Star Trek, I think Captain Picard, Enterprise D, those stories, and you know, if I have to think of an alien, I think of Klingons and Romulans. These are, you know, the bad guys that pop up in the Next Generation so often. Although Cardass, someone I know, hey, Star Trek fans, stop sending emails. I know Cardassians appeared on the Next Generation first, so don't get upset. But they didn't play a big role in the Next Generation.
No, they bloomed on Deep Space Nine.
That's right. Yes, they came into their own like beautiful Cardassian flowers or something. And so this episode is really a Kira Nerys episode. And I think the secondary character is probably Garak, just because he has interesting things to do. Everybody else is basically appears once just because they have to, I guess, contractually, perhaps.
Yep.
Although O'Brien, I don't think O'Brien shows up at all in this episode.
He's no, off. Or Jake, or...
Oh, Jake, no Nog.
No Nog.
If you're looking for some Nog.
You will not find him here.
That's right. But Dax shows up very briefly, mostly to talk about holosuites. I don't understand why Dax is here, but she's meeting Kira Nerys, and Kira's basically like, I cannot hang out with you, Dax. I must go. I have a message from Bajor, and the message is basically, hey, I'm a researcher, and I wanted to talk to you about your time at this prison camp. And Kira's like, I was never at that prison camp. And the researcher's like, what about this mugshot of you and all of this information I have about you? And then Kira's like, what?
And, actually, Dax is more what, because she says, but that's you. That's a picture of you, as if to emphasize the point as it leads into the pre-episode cliffhanger.
That's true, just in case no one noticed that's her. yeah. And then, yep, Dax. I don't think Dax comes back. Maybe she might do a scan or something later.
She pilots the Defiant later on to go to Cardassia.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah. So she's there as a function more than a character at that point.
That's right. She's there. And she's the one that activates the holographic override for the communication system.
Yeah.
Very important.
Handy device to have when you're trying to fool Cardassians.
That's true. So that's our main story is Kira. There's somebody who looks like Kira who was in this prison camp, right? And so she goes off to, you have any problem on Deep Space Nine, who do you go to talk to about? You go to Odo to talk to him about why you seemingly were in a prison camp but have no memory of this. Odo is like, well, what were you doing 10 years ago? Maybe you were in that prison camp. Which doesn't seem very helpful, Odo.
No, but he says maybe your memory is faulty. I like that he defaults to that as his initial diagnosis.
He's like, yeah, maybe you're wrong, Kira. And yeah. Kira says, I remember where I was 10 years ago. To which Odo does ask the obvious question, how can you be so sure it was 10 years ago? And without realizing, I guess he completely forgets what Kira was up to 10 years ago, but she was being a freedom fighter and fighting for her life. So I feel like he would remember important dates when that's happening.
Uh-huh.
I've never done it myself, clearly, because I'm a coward. But I assume.
No. But then there's another guy who she talks to over the vidphone who says, oh, yeah, we were totally on Cardassia 10 years ago. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, and your hair was different then. And she was like, oh, what? That's the detail.
That's the linchpin of this whole operation. If my hair was longer, then maybe I was there.
Maybe I'm crazy. And so this is now Kira thinks, well, I've got to check this out. I have to go down to Bajor and meet with this researcher. And this is the part I don't really understand why she has to go there. Because I feel like this is something you could do over Skype, but she's like, nope, I've got to go down to Bajor and talk to the lady and maybe look around and see what. So I guess her this woman is stationed at the prison camp. It's probably like a monument or something, a museum. And so Kira wants to go down there and see what's what. And you think,
which I can understand to get the first, you know, she already has learned all that she can via Skype, space Skype. So I could see why she'd want to go down there.
You need boots on the ground.
Check it out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And this makes me think, I wonder, you know, she's not a member of Starfleet, but she works on a Federation space station that's kind of being administered by the Federation. And it makes me think of like, how much time do you have to give a notice to take time off? Because she basically is like, well, I'm going. I'll be back in a few days. And Sisko's like, okay.
Yep. Well, you're not union, so I guess I can't stop you.
Which is, you know, as a friend, that's a great thing to do. But as a commanding officer, you might think, well, we have to, you know, figure out what we're going to do with your schedule. And but none of that seems important. So off she goes onto a freighter. And this is where they need to introduce Garak into this because he's going to play an important part later. So they say, I'm imagining I'm in the writer's room, and they think, how could we introduce Garak into this episode? And of course it is because he's having lunch with Bashir.
Yep. Why not? Having some burgers and fries.
Why not? You know, and so they talk about it. This is when Garak basically says, I can't leave the station because the Cardassians will kill me. And Bashir says, well, that's ridiculous, which I don't really understand why that would be his reaction because it seems like it's pretty spot on, but...
He's like, well, they don't want to kill me, so why would they want to kill you, even though you're a Cardassian?
It doesn't make any sense, Garak.
No.
I'm beginning to think you might be more than just a simple tailor, Garak.
Which I had forgotten about. That's when Garak appeared, because I think I'd watched one previous episode when my wife Erica was on the show. She watched the episode called Melora, I think, which is a Bashir-heavy episode. I'm not sure even Garak featured in that. And so when Garak appeared on screen, I was like, oh, right, Garak's in this show. I forgot about him. I quite like Garak. He was a good character. So I remembered as the scene carried out that, oh, yeah, he's the tailor, isn't he? But he's nefarious or something. So basically, I got all the greatest hits of Garak in this one episode, which I thought was a nice reintroduction to the character.
That's right. Yes. And luckily for me, Bashir doesn't play a big part in this episode because he is, all told, my least favorite character on Deep Space Nine. Not a big fan of Bashir. Sorry, Bashir lovers out there. But Bashir, we spent even more time than we should have on Bashir, because really, I think that's his only scene. Oh, no, he comes back later when Garak basically says, hey, Julian, I need to tell you something. And Julian's like, well, why don't we just tell Sisko? And Garak's like, no, I can't for some reason. I didn't understand that scene. But anyway, we'll get to it. Dun-dun-dun. The big thing that happens is Kira is missing. The researcher calls up and's like, hey, everybody, BT-dubs, Kira never showed up. And I'm worried for her. No one's seen her, and everybody's upset because she's gone. And then she's gone, but this ends with Kira waking up, looking into a mirror, and seeing she's now a Cardassian, or at least she appears to be a Cardassian. A Cardassian by the name of Ilana Gamor, I believe is how you say it?
I think so, something like that, yeah.
And this is where I feel like this episode really starts getting interesting, because I feel like Kira, well, A, I'm going to come out and say Kira is one of my favorite characters. And so I just love how Kira's always angry, which I find exciting for some reason. She's always has righteous anger. And you understand, you know, the Cardassians killed everyone she loves. And now she is supposedly a Cardassian herself, which she completely rejects at the beginning. And what makes this episode so interesting, I think, is that as it goes on, you sense that she's kind of thinking, well, maybe I am a Cardassian. But then she breaks the mirror, and I feel like at that point she realizes, no, I'm not actually a Cardassian. But
it's a good episode in that it makes you think. I mean, you know, she begins to doubt herself, because we know, you know, I was thinking about how perhaps later years, the way they made the show might be a little more bold, and it would start off with the Cardassian and the other alien lady coming into the dark room and asking, you know, her to sit up. And then the opening cliffhanger would actually be Kira discovering that she's a Cardassian, and then it would go from there. But I think the fact that we are reinforced with the notion that, no, Kira Nerys has been on Deep Space Nine, as we've always known. And now, so we have reason to doubt. And so it's the viewer who also has to sort of be convinced that she is, in fact, a Cardassian, that I think is what makes it effective.
Yes. And so she wakes up and she's got a guy from the Obsidian Order who's basically says, you know, by the way, you were never a Bajoran. You were an Obsidian Order agent for 10 years, a deep sleeper agent. And frankly, I don't even know why we use sleeper agents, because it's always difficult to re-engage them in Cardassian society. And I thought that whole scene was very effective, because he was kind of like apologizing and just assuming that, you know, everybody knows this and it's a tough break, but we'll work through this together, Kira.
Although yeah, name's not Kira. It sounds plausible, because he's like admitting, like, this isn't the most perfect system, so we'll work this together. You know, it's not like you're crazy. Of course, you were not on Deep Space Nine, and so it's because he doesn't immediately dismiss her history that she remembers. It makes you think. They go, oh, interesting. Now, are we watching actual Kira Nerys, or are we watching a double, or are we watching, is her memory really affected? It keeps you guessing throughout the episode.
It does, which I think it's quite effective at that. And that guy's name is Entek, for people who want to know Cardassian names for some reason. He's a Obsidian Order guy. And it is clear that he you know, Cardassians don't look very trustworthy, if I can be so bold as to judge a book by their cover, but I feel like they were designed not to look trustworthy. And this guy, he looks particularly untrustworthy. Or maybe that's just me.
I certainly don't trust him. No, I also did not trust him whatsoever, perhaps because he was being so nice.
Yes, he was being too nice.
Yes, a little bit.
And then, so back on Deep Space Nine, they figure out, oh no, she's been transported. We need to find her. Okay, then we don't really, they're going to find her. Spoiler alert, she doesn't die. She doesn't become a Cardassian at the end of this episode. The most interesting part, I think, is now that she's there at this house, she thinks she's in a prison. Entek says, you're not in a prison. You're in your childhood bedroom, in the home that you grew up in. And then in walks her father, who is what? T'Kene Gamor, who is a legate in the Cardassian Central Command. So he's a high mucky muck in the military arm of the Cardassian Empire. or I don't think they're an empire. They're Cardassian Alliance or something. I don't know what they are.
Yeah, what they're called.
Whatever they're called. But they're the military.
The team. The Cardassian team. Team Cardassian.
Team Cardassian. Yes. And they... I'm going to skip over explaining Cardassian society because people who are listening to this podcast are familiar with Cardassian society. But the thing you need to know is that the Obsidian Order and Central Command have some friction, right? Because the Obsidian Order thinks that it should be doing whatever it wants, but Central Command thinks it's in control of everything. And there's some tension there. And so Gamor, he's kind of like your Cardassian daddy. He's very nice. He's like, you know, I know that you don't remember anything, but we'll work through this together. Maybe if you watch this video you made before you were turned into a Bajoran, all will become clear. And you know, we can, you're a guest here, even though there's a force field covering your window. So don't worry, we do that for everybody.
Exactly. It's for your own safety that we lock you in your own room.
That's right, because you never know what's gonna happen. And then he goes away, and this is when Garak, through his back channels with the Obsidian Order, finds out that Kira has been captured by the Obsidian Order, and he basically says to Captain Sisko, at this point, there's no point in trying to save her. If the Obsidian Order have her, she's as good as dead. So I'm going to go back to hemming some pants now. And surprisingly, Sisko does not accept this.
Nope.
And he, as previously discussed, he makes Garak join them. Him, Odo, and Dax take up the Defiant and go into a Cardassian space with a fake shield, harmonic signature, appear as a freighter, and Garak is reticent, but he agrees to do it. They encounter almost immediately a Cardassian patrol who says, "We're boarding you."
has such screening technology existed before or after this episode in Star Trek? Not necessarily that specific model of it, but I just found it very convenient that they could sort of disguise their own. I suppose Starfleet is at its best when they're trying to be all very upfront and forthright and everything. So such devious matters aren't necessarily in their nature, but
they're not so good at it.
No, do you recall seeing that kind of technology used by Starfleet elsewhere?
I feel like they modify their warp signatures often enough to appear like a different ship while in warp. The problem I had with this plan is that they weren't in warp and they were just changing like their shields. So if you looked outside and looked at their ship, it would look like the Defiant still.
Yes.
And you'd be like, that's not a freighter.
No one uses windows in Star Trek. That's the one problem. No one uses the windows. Just look out the window sometimes.
I suppose people will say, well, you know, the distances that they're covering, it's hard to see visually. But I feel like you would still check somehow with like a telescope or something. I don't know.
I suppose if they weren't in weapons range at the time, then they weren't in visual range either. So that does make some sense. But it's still a very risky plan to sort of try to fly in and stay away from all the ships that are hovering around Cardassia without being caught.
Yes, and it doesn't work because almost immediately it's foiled when the Cardassian who hails them says, prepare for boarding. And they're like, you don't need to board us. We're cool.
Just and carry on. Like, you don't need to see our badges or anything like that as he tries the Jedi mind trick, but it doesn't work.
It doesn't. The Cardassian is like, no, seriously, I need to inspect your ship. And this is when Garak... This is another one of my favorite moments in the episode, because Garak plays as a simple tailor, right? He's meek. He doesn't really want to be very helpful. He tries to blend in the background. But then at the moment when he is, he's like, Sisko, I can clear this up. And Sisko's like, okay. And then this is a completely different Garak who's talking to this Cardassian officer, giving this secret code and telling him to erase all, logs from the sensors and do not speak of anyone to anyone about this. And then once that call is over, he's immediately back to the tailor. And he says, well, I think Sisko or Odo asked him where he found that code. And he says, oh, I overheard someone talking about it when I was hemming their pants.
Yeah. He's immediately sort of goes into bashful mode as if to not reveal his sources or secrets. And you get an insight into what kind of a history he's had. And I remember it being like quite a moment Because as I said, I didn't remember much about Garak. So when that happened, I thought, oh, goodness, this is an interesting character. And he has a lot to say about things and has done a lot of stuff off screen that we've never seen. And he knows all the security clearance codes. And I know the great thing is that the Cardassian pilot checks it out. He doesn't just sort of agree with it and move on. He actually enters it in. Okay, yep, story checks out. I'll get on. And I do like how I can't remember the line, but Garak sort of says, you know, I think perhaps we should move on before he, you know, begins to use his initiative or something like
yes,
that.
Yes,
yes. I don't know what the exact line was, but.
Oh, Garak. So good. Then we're back at Kira getting grilled by Entek, and he's getting annoyed because she will not tell him anything about the secrets that are happening on Deep Space Nine, what ships are patrolling the border, how many Federation personnel are on Deep Space Nine, all kinds of things that she won't tell him. And so, in what I thought was a very effective scene, he takes his little wrist comm or whatever and calls up somebody and says, hey, bring me, you know, beam over item 3567-1 or whatever it is. And then explains to Kira that, you know, the Obsidian Order has many things that we've collected throughout time and we catalog everything and keep it. And you think, well, what is he bringing? And they beam in. For maximum drama, I suppose they beam in this thing covered in a sheet.
Yep.
Which I thought was a nice touch. And then he reveals it, and it is Kira's Bajoran corpse. Dun, dun, dun. Because the idea is that they killed the real Kira, who is a Bajoran, and replaced her with this Cardassian to look like her. And Kira, this is the moment, I feel like, that Kira starts thinking, well, maybe there is something to this. Even though she says, well, that could be a clone or a duplicate. And Entek is like, well, believe what you want, but I'm telling you, you're a Cardassian lady.
Yeah, because I was thinking that was a genuinely surprising moment, I remember, because I was thinking, okay, it's just going to be sort of mind games. You know, we've seen this before in Chain of Command, Part 1 and 2 in Star Trek Next Generation. This is what the Cardassians do. They sort of get inside your head. And so when they produced Dead Kira, I thought, obviously I know that they're going to put all the toys back in the box at the end of this, and Kira is going to be Kira, but I don't know how they're going to get there right now. And so this had me guessing even more until the end of the episode.
Yes, and then to compound it, Entek tells her about a memory that she's told no one about, where she's, you know, she killed a cat that was a mama cat, and she found the kittens, and she was very sad. And she's like, how do you know that? And he says, we implanted that memory, which is very effective. This is the interesting thing is that the tension between the two. So Entek wants to basically torture her because she's not telling him anything. And Gamor doesn't want her to be tortured because it's his daughter and he loves her. And he doesn't really like the Obsidian Order. And so there's a lot of tension there. Akira tries to escape and Gamor finds her escaping. And he says, listen, if you want to escape, go ahead. You're not going to get far. I'm not going to stop you. But at least watch the video before you leave. And maybe that will help. And she watches the video. And then this is even more cracks appear in her certainty that she is a Bajoran. Because she watches the video and she seems like she's watching herself basically tell herself that, you know, she's excited to go and all this stuff. So it's very effective. Mm-hmm.
It is rather, yes.
I like it. And Entek gets angrier too. And angrier. You know, whatever. And Gamor gives her, I really like Gamor, and he gives her something that belonged to his wife, who was her mother, but not actually her mother. And he's like, okay, I know Entek wants to torture you, so we need to get you out of here. And so they attempt. Gamor has his little, you know, I don't even know this other random Cardassian who's an acolyte of Gamor, I suppose.
Right.
Shows up. We're like, who is this dude? And this is when we find out that Gamor is not just a kindly old evil Cardassian, but he's a kindly old rebel Cardassian who wants to shake up Cardassia and make it a better place for everybody. And Kira's like, oh, that's awesome. And then quickly thinks, uh-oh. I think that maybe the Obsidian Order was not so interested in me and more interested in you.
Uh-huh.
Which turns out to be the truth.
It was. That was also a bit of a shocking twist. I mean, he was kindly enough, and I thought perhaps, you know, I had Chain of Command still in my head, and so the whole time I realized that that the Legate was very nice, mm-hmm. but I still distrusted him because I could still see David Warner's Cardassian telling Picard how many lights there were, thinking, "Oh no, I've seen this story before. I don't trust them at all." And so when it actually comes out that he was this, and then after even that revelation, I thought, oh no, that's just a gimmick as well that they're trying to get Kira. But then
this
then
is Kira, a triple cross.
I know. I thought there was going to be so many crossing, and then I was worried at first because I didn't think that Kira would be the one to sort of put the things together, and she would sort of be the pawn in all this. But she's the one who actually figures out what's going on here and solves it, and mm-hmm. and gets his little helper killed, alas.
It's true.
If Cardassians wore red shirts, then surely he would have worn one in this instance. But
yes, because in astonishing timing, Entek appears and he's like, yep, you're right, Kira. We didn't really care about you. I mean, it's nice. You're a bonus, but we're more interested in bringing down Gamor and killing his little acolyte, which he kills. And then he's like, well, now I guess we'll kill Gamor. And everyone's like, oh, no, you're going to kill us all. But in burst Sisko and Garak, and they say, you know, put your weapons down. And Sisko does a very strange thing, unless you know that Odo was with them, but he has like a knapsack with him that he throws across the room.
Yep. And you think, I saw that. Go on. Yep.
You think to yourself, that's weird. Why would Captain Sisko bring a backpack with him? Does he have like fruit roll-ups in there or some yogurt or something?
Or is he robbing a bank? Or that's what he thinks. They can fill that up with cash. That's unmarked, right. Unsequential, $20 bills. Do it now.
But no, it is Odo. And now they have Entek surrounded. Because I did think that Entek gives up very quickly because there's only one gun. For some reason, Sisko doesn't have a gun or a phaser. It's very strange, but Odo gets the drop on him. Everybody leaves. Everybody's happy. But then there's a great moment where Entek basically says, Garak, why are you helping these people? The Obsidian Order considered, you know, our history behind us, and we were going to forgive you, and everything was going to be cool. And Garak is like, I don't really care. We're leaving. And everybody leaves. But Entek then goes to draw a phaser. And another kind of very telling moment, Garak kills him without a blinking, and then says,
I know.
A pity, I rather liked him, and then leaves.
That was another shocking one. What a great Garak story. He kind of serves as a functional secondary character in all this, but mm-hmm. we learn so much about him just in the two or three scenes that he's in that I think it's a great economy of writing, I find, to yes. sort of introduce very interesting backstory to his character.
And he's a fantastic character. That's why you don't know everything about him, but you know there's a lot more that you want to know about him.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode ends with, you know, Kira is in fact a Bajoran. Dr. Bashir does a Bajor scan or something, and she turns up Bajoran. And there's a nice end scene where Gamor is on Deep Space Nine, and he's about to leave. And Kira's like, oh, if you're leaving, you should really take your wife's pendant that you gave me or whatever it is. And he says, no, I want you to keep it. You're the closest thing I have to family, even though we aren't actually related. And I thought, oh, that's very nice. And then off he leaves.
The one thing I was surprised about is that his daughter is actually out there. That was the one thing that I wasn't mm-hmm. quite sure about. So she is out there. She didn't die. She didn't
I don't know
did if not exist.
I think Gamor comes back later in Deep Space Nine, but I don't know if we ever find out if his daughter was alive or not. But I think that Gamor dies later.
Oh, well, spoilers for that then, I guess.
I'm sorry, but I could be wrong, but I think he's assassinated. Uh-huh.
He looked familiar to me but as the episode went on, it could have been just me thinking, oh, he looks familiar. Oh, right. I saw him first earlier in this same episode. but he
I
seemed
know him from somewhere.
Exactly. I can't quite place you. I think you were on page. Oh no, you were here the first scene of this episode. That's right.
Yeah. He does come back in Ties of Blood and Water, and I do believe he dies. Spoiler alert for a different episode.
That's true. Well, when I do my rewatch, and I will do it, I will hope to forget that and everything else that is supposed to come. Like, for instance, that Odo was a shapeshifter. Don't tell me when, but I think at some point he has trouble with his shapeshifting.
He does.
And he can't do it anymore. And for some reason, I thought that that happened relatively early on in the series, perhaps to spare the production budget from having to have him morph from burlap sacks into Odo. But when Sisko chucked the bag there, I thought, oh, what is? Oh, right, he's still a shapeshifter at this moment. Well, he would have fooled me too if Captain Sisko walked into this room and threw a bag behind me. I'd say, well, that's an odd thing to do. Oh well, I'll just keep my back towards the bag and face you and assume everything's going to be fine.
It is an inconspicuous, harmless bag. Surely I could ignore it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that was the weirdest part of this episode. If you did not know that Odo is a shapeshifter, which I did. So that's the episode, Stephen. What did you think of it overall?
It was really good. It was a really good, really well written episode. I've seen two now in relative recent memory, Melora and this. Mm-hmm. I think this one was a little stronger than the Melora one because it tied in perhaps to the history of Kira and the Cardassian Bajor thing, which I always found quite fascinating when I watched the show originally, like 20 odd years ago. So it whetted my appetite for when I go through Deep Space Nine again, which I don't think I'll do until obviously I finished the original series, but also once my wife finishes with me, I'm watching it for the first time, Babylon 5, for their Babylon 5 podcast. So a series to which this is not entirely similar. So
they're space siblings, I feel like.
Yeah, they started out in similar galaxies, but then sort of expanded outwards, I think, once once the initial premise was sort of set in stone.
Yes, and I will agree with you. This is a very good episode. In fact, when I randomly had it generated, I told you that I thought it was a good episode before I'd even rewatched it again, because I had watched it maybe a month ago, because my wife has not seen all of Deep Space Nine, so we are watching it in order. And so we had recently watched this episode, and it reminded me that it was a really great episode. So I really like Kira and her dealing with Cardassians and her history and her being an angry Kira is an entertaining Kira, I think.
Yep.
And luckily she's often angry. So
she is, but as we discussed earlier, she has a lot to be angry about.
She does. She has good reasons. And I have good reasons for thanking you for being on the podcast, because this was a lot of fun. So thank you, Stephen, for joining me.
Thank you very much, Scott, once again. I'm always willing and able to do any Deep Space Nine episodes that you randomly select.
Wait a second.